Welcome to the Linux Journal Insider 206, the Cool Projects issue for July 2011. Hello, Kyle. How are you doing?
Hey, Sean. Doing great. It's a nice sunny day out here. I don't know what the weather's like up in the middle finger of Michigan, but out here it's summer's here. So.
Well, in the middle finger of Michigan, we generally have about three different climates in one day. This morning it was absurdly sunny, the kind that, you know, melts your eyeballs. And then about halfway through the day it started raining, and right now I believe there's a monsoon going on. So this time of year is just crazy up here. But it's generally either too hot or too cold. We don't get nice, comfortable weather until, like, the middle of June. So, and by the time we get nice weather here, hey, I did a segue already. My wife and I are planning on taking a trip this summer.
Awesome. Where are you going?
You know, it's funny. My wife has never been on a plane before, and I've never left the country before. So, for our long-delayed honeymoon, we never went on a honeymoon, and we've been married over 15 years now. But for our long-delayed honeymoon, we're going to fly to Mexico and go to a resort like south of Cancun. So it's going to be an adventure for both of us, and it's going to be pretty exciting.
That's awesome. We actually spent our honeymoon in Cancun.
Oh, awesome.
So, kind of funny. Yeah, so that's good times. So
now, you didn't wait 15 years after you were married to go, right?
No, we went... No, we didn't. We haven't been married 15 years. So.
Yeah, that laugh was like, ha ha, you're old man. I felt that. That kind of hurt. So do you have any plans this summer? Are you doing anything cool?
This summer, probably going to work on the house a lot, which isn't exactly fun. And other than that, I think we're thinking maybe toward the end of summer. We haven't finalized plans yet, but we might go abroad. We might do a trip to Germany. We haven't decided 100% yet, but we're thinking about it.
Ah, so. Well, it sounds like you'll have a lot of fun and mayhem while you're there. And with that, I'll lead right into my first article. This is the Cool Projects issue. It's always one of my favorites. And my first article is actually by Mike Deal. And it's Fun and Mayhem with the Blender Game Engine. Now, have you ever used Blender? I mean, Blender is one of those, like, it's like the Swiss Army knife of the Linux world, apparently. Have you used Blender very much?
I have not. I've read articles, and that's about as far as I've gotten with it. I haven't actually fired it up.
Now, I have a friend that lives up here in Michigan. He's one of the five people that live up here. And he's a Linux person, and he really enjoys using Blender. He's great at it. It's the kind of thing, it's cool to watch, but I don't really understand what he's doing all the time. Blender has kind of a steep learning curve, but it's so powerful. I mean, it'll do 3D rendering. People do nonlinear video editing with Blender. That's one of the things I actually want to work on. And then Mike this month actually talks about using its game engine to create games. And the article's cool. It touches my heart because it has pretty pictures. I'm a big fan of pretty pictures and articles, and it's cool. You know, how to make a 3D game. It's, you know, Blender is just one of those multi-purpose tools that does everything.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Like I said, one question: if you've used it at all, does it have VI key bindings? Because that's an important factor for me.
It has Emacs key binding, so, you know. But it comes, now wait, it comes with 13 extra control keys that you can put on your keyboard. No. I don't know if there's any geeky key bindings for Blender, because it's one of the things that I need to learn. And that, you know, Mike's article really goes into detail to show you how to make a game using the game engine, which is a kind of a neat way to get introduced to Blender, I think.
I really like the pictures really show this. It's almost like a fun stunt car game, you know. It's like you're testing the guy who's driving through a burning building and hits a big bunch of blocks and everything falls down, or Fonzie jumping over the shark or whatever. It's like that kind of a game. It looks kind of, I don't know. It looks like a good example for this. I don't know.
Yeah, it does. You're kind of breaking up there, but we hopefully will be better. Yes, and the graphics, you know, as they're rendered in the page, they're kind of like blocky and 8-bit looking, so it kind of reminds me of like Tron from 1980. I don't know why. It just looks pretty cool.
I don't know if you ever played the Terminator computer game back in the day. It was sort of had like blocky, you're like the Terminator, like Terminator 1, not the, it had blocky kind of car graphics like this. Have you ever played that?
I have not. Did it have a robot with glowing red eyes?
It, well, you were the robot, I think, and it was kind of cool because it was before you had a lot of 3D worlds you were walking around. It's one of the first ones where you could walk around as a Terminator. Now, this is Terminator 1, not Terminator 2, where the guy was like a big block of goo.
Right.
Oh, actually, speaking of big blocks of goo, so the article I'm going to talk about is Put Your Office in the Clouds with OpenGoo. This is by Hani Saig, and what this article talks about is, and this is sort of near and dear to my heart in a way, because this article talks about one problem or challenge you can have sometimes with a lot of this, with a lot of cloud resources, is that you don't completely control your data. You know, if you have an office suite at home you're using on your computer, you have control of your own computer, your hard drives, that sort of thing, and it's very difficult for you to not, for your account to be disabled on your own computer. I mean, I guess I've done that to myself, but you can usually fix that. Anyway, in this article, Hani had an account disabled on a Google site, and as a result, looked for some alternatives because who likes to have, you know, your documents access taken away from you for what any reason really. So this article talks about how to host your own sort of office suite in the cloud using OpenGoo, which they now changed to Fing Office, which F-E-N-G Office, which is, I don't know, I like OpenGoo way, like 20 times better. I think they should have stuck with that name personally, and I'm glad that the article uses OpenGoo. Where do you sit on that fence?
You know, I definitely a cooler name. I wonder, did they get pressure from Google or something? I mean, was it too much like OpenGoogle? Or I don't know why they changed the name.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just assume, I don't know, Goo is, maybe Goo is like Google. I don't know. I just think, just such a better name. I mean, it seems like a plug-in for Blender, too, though, like OpenGoo or something.
Yeah,
anyway.
It does sound cool, yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, so the article talks about how you set this up, and it sounds like the setup seems very familiar to anyone who's set up a database-driven website before. You need a web server, you need a database backend. They're using MySQL for this, and PHP. And once you do the setup, essentially you can this is designed to have shared documents and shared calendars and shared resources among different groups. So once you have this set up, a lot of the article goes into the levels of access control that you can put in so that you can have different companies see different works. Spaces is what they call them, but groups, places where you can have groups of documents. So if you've ever used like a Google document share, you can share documents with each other. The same sort of thing here. And I don't know, I thought it was like a really cool option. I like these sorts of things where you can, you know, there's a lot of advantages to having cloud services out there, but to me an even better advantage is if you can get the same features only run it on your own equipment. So
right.
This is I was really, really pleased because this is a piece of software that I hadn't heard about before. So I know that down the road, if I run into needing the situation, it's something I'm definitely going to be looking up.
And what's nice about something like this is you could host it in the clouds if you want. I mean, you could host it, you know, on Amazon EC2, but then if some, you know, the unthinkable happens and Amazon goes offline for quite some time, you could always restore your backups to your own servers, and you could be up and running on your own servers because you have that option if you are controlling the back end. And
yeah, it's really useful if you can control your own hardware, you know, at least in the real world.
Exactly. And that leads me to my next article. You picked right up on the segue. That was great. My next article is by PJ Radcliffe, and it's Using Linux to Control Real-World Hardware. And this is cool. Now, when I was a kid, you were probably cooler than me, but I used to have like batteries and little motors and wires, and I would like tape the motors to popsicle sticks and make fake planes with rotating propellers and stuff. And I didn't have many friends.
I don't know. That sounds pretty cool to me, actually.
See, that's the kind of thing I used to do. Okay, and that's what this article actually reminded me of, because this is using OpenUSB I/O so that your Linux computer can actually control circuits on a little breadboard, you know, like an ATM EGA32 microprocessor. And it, basically the idea is that you almost make your own add-on card, and you can have it control things like the examples here in the article are, you know, there's actually a little DC motor on there, and there's some LED lights, And what's really cool about it, again, is that you are using your computer to control hardware, like, you know, DC motors, you know, a big old analog device to do stuff. So I could have hooked a computer up to my awesome popsicle stick airplane and had the computer turn the propeller on and off according to wind shear and stuff. I also had a good imagination as a kid. But this is neat. I think this is a good article to lead you to do other things. I mean, you know, it just shows you how to control things like the LED lights and the, you know, the RS-232 ports and, you know, how you can do all of those things. And it kind of leads itself. It's almost like a project primer, you know, like if you do this, just imagine what you could do with, you know, your whatever you happen to have in your junk drawer kind of thing. So it's a really neat article. It goes through the use of OpenUSB IO, so, you know, connecting to your USB port, and you can actually control stuff. It's just cool. It is. It reminds me of my days of taping motors to popsicle sticks.
Yeah, I thought this was really cool. Like you said, and what's interesting is I like to see alternatives. Well, I think Arduino is definitely a really cool, really interesting platform. It's also cool to see projects like this where you can get similar results and you can work on similar projects on, you know, microprocessors like this that you may have maybe either more available to you or something you can possibly build yourself a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. So it's just cool seeing like an alternative to that, because there's a lot more hardware hacking going on these days, and it's cool to see for people to have a lot of different options.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now there's a lot of options going on. Like, for example, if you want to publish, you have a lot of different options these days. You can either publish in print, or you can publish with EPUB. You can publish in PDF. You can, write it by hand and hand flyers out to people on the street.
Smoke signals.
You know, carrier pigeons. But big way to publish these days is e-publishing. The article that I'm going to talk about next, that was the longest segue ever.
It was worth it, man. That was great.
You kind of wrote along. It's like it's telling a story. It's weaving a tapestry. So the article's called So You Want to E-Publish, and it's by Dan Sawyer. And so what this article does is it talks about how to get started if you want to start e-publishing. So whether you're doing some sort of a magazine, or you want to start publishing stories or things like that, and you want to publish them to any sort of ebook reader, like a Kindle, a Sony e-reader, a Nook, a iPad, whatever, there's certain formats and certain rules and certain procedures that make it a little bit easier to get things in an EPUB format. And there's a lot of different tools out there, from things you can buy. Amazon has their own set of tools for doing layout. What it comes down to is not so much the content, but how do you get the layout to look right when you're publishing, say, a book? And so this article talks about how to use a program called, I'm going to say Sigil.
I think Sigil.
Sigil?
I think Sigil.
It made me think of like Sig, I don't know, like inter-process communication. Anyway, yes.
We're probably both wrong.
Yeah. So I'm just going to use yours, so Sigil. Basically this software makes it very easy to, it's almost like a, you can think of like a word processor that allows you to organize your EPUB. And so EPUBs are working with, you know, XHTML, XML, CSS, things like that. So if you've done any kind of web programming or, you know, web layout, it should be fairly familiar. And this article just goes into how to use the software, how to do some basic layout conventions, like how to do pull quotes, how to do drop caps, and other things that it's funny, if you've never published a book before, a lot of the stuff you take for granted when you're flipping through a book, the drop quotes, things like pull quotes, things like that. But when you're actually writing a book, you have to pay a lot of attention, and little things like what font you use when you have a code example versus what font you use just for regular text versus what font you use when you have a code example, but you're typing, it's the differential what the user types versus what the user doesn't type. Things like that all matter when you're publishing, especially a technical book. And this article goes over some of the ways to deal with that kind of alignment, because if you're self-publishing, for instance, which a lot of people that are doing ebooks are interested in, you have to do all this stuff yourself. It's not like you can, it's not like you have a lot of layout experts or editors that you can bounce this stuff off of. So yeah, this article really, you know, does a good job of talking about how to set this up with a open source, free, easy, looks like relatively easy to use tool.
And you know, I don't know how many ebooks you use, but I'm a big ebook reader, and I mean, I'm not like a nook, but I'm a reader of ebooks, and there's a huge difference. You know, you can get ebooks that are just simple conversions from text files, and you know, if you're reading fiction, that's fine. It works without problems, but sometimes you'll get like an EPUB file that has been meticulously formatted with, you know, a table of contents that works and is linked and you know, it has things like pull quotes, and it's an amazingly nice experience to have those well formatted, well thought out ebooks as opposed to just, you know, the text dump, especially if it's something that you want to reference and go back and forth. I mean, the table of contents is just invaluable to have it actually linked to chapters instead of, you know, hitting the page down button, you know, 436 times. So to have a properly formatted ebook really, really is nice. I mean, so this tool looks, like you said, awesome, pretty easy to use, and it looks like the end product is pretty cool. So, yeah, it looks great. Now, I guess that's it for this month. Kyle, what cool projects are you working on? I mean, this is the cool projects issue. So what are you doing that's super cool?
So one of my old cool projects was my beer fridge. I actually ended up writing two different articles about how first I set up a laptop to control the temperature of a spare refrigerator so I could ferment beer in it. And then I followed up by using a pogo plug. Well, lately I realized, you know, I really want a graph of this. I want to know, you know, whether how much the temperature fluctuates in a more visual way. And so, long story short, what I was able to do is since my Pogo plug is running a version of Arch Linux now, it was the hardest part of the process was figuring out Pac-Man syntax. Once I had that all knocked out, I was pretty easy to install Munin client on the Pogo plug. And then it was even easier to write a very basic shell script of a custom Munin plugin that reported back the beer fridge temperature. And then I already had a Munin server set up that was trending some of the other servers I manage. And so I just pointed at my Pogo plug, and now I have graphs, you know, that will go historically. I can watch the temperature of my beer fridge fluctuate as the, you know, the heater kicks on or kicks off and the compressor kicks on or
awesome.
Kicks off.
Now how often does it pull?
Munin pulls every 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. So it's pretty good. Pretty detailed graph of the rising and falling of temperature. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, in the fridge temperature doesn't vary that much, I've noticed anyway. I mean, I don't even pull the temperature for the internally for my script, but every like minute or so.
Oh, okay.
Because it's so well insulated in a fridge, you know, the temperature doesn't fluctuate that much. You may fluctuate like it depends on the temperature outside, but you know, maybe half a degree at most a minute if there's a huge difference outside and inside.
Oh, interesting. So. My actually cool project for this summer is heat related as well. My office right now, I'm actually sitting in my office, and I have my big server rack sitting next to me because, you know, I'm a geek and I have a server rack and switches and everything in my house. And I've noticed now it's starting to get warm. You know, we talked about summer. And in my office, when I come home at the end of the day, it's about 100 degrees. So what I'm planning to do is it'll take a lot of wire running, but I'm going to run some network cable up to my office and then down to the basement, and I'm going to relocate my server rack down to the basement because I think that'll – I mean, the basement's always cool, so it'll be a great thing. And plus, it'll be quieter. I mean, I have a server running and all this stuff right next to my head. So anyway, that's my plan, wiring the house.
Well, that's cool. I mean, and the thing is rack mount equipment, usually people don't design rack mount equipment based on sound. You know, so if you have it in your office, you notice just how loud some of those teeny tiny fans can be.
Yes.
Especially when things spin up. So.
Yes, exactly. And I'm upgrading to an HP ProCurve switch, and they're noisy little buggers. So I kind of don't want that in my office while I'm recording podcasts and stuff. So.
Now, are you going to move it back up to your office in the winter?
No, although, for efficiency's sake, it probably would be good usage of the electricity. But, no, I think it's going to be a permanent move downstairs.
Maybe you just duct the heat up. I don't know how your house is laid out. You just have a nice heat duct that goes. I just wanted to say duct a bunch of times.
Duct, yeah. So, duct. And I could use duct tape to seal it.
The one legitimate use, yeah.
The one use it's meant for, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Kyle, thanks again. Thank you, and thank you all for listening to the Linux Journal Insider for the July 2011 issue. Make sure to pick up a copy on newsstands in mid-June. And subscribers, if you're listening to this, you probably already have a copy in your hands, or it's on its way. We hope you enjoy. Next month is our community issue, so make sure to tune in again. And because without you, we have no community. And don't forget to visit us online at www.linuxjournal.com. Hey, Kyle, thanks again.
Yeah, talk to you next time.
All right, bye.